So let's go back to that day. You've got your aunt sitting on your chest.
Yeah.
You can barely breathe. You've been pushed
right.
on the ground. You're struggling and struggling. You're 16, so you're not a little child.
No.
So you're tall and
I'm
strong,
tall,
and you're
yeah.
trying to you're
yeah.
trying to get up. Did it occur to you at this point? It's Bondou. That's what they're
oh,
going to
yes,
do. Oh, you
because
knew what it was
as that
be.
Was happening, the scream. I can't sing it now because for me, it just bring back horrible memories. Mm. But there is a song they sang, and you knew. I knew as soon as I heard that song and the chant. And I felt it right here, oh. Vanessa. I felt it. I go, oh my God, this is the day. Because my mom had said no from day one. And I knew straight away. And I grew up in a home where we did talk a lot. We talk about everything, about world, about our interests. My dad was very liberal. He would let you talk about anything. But this is one thing we never spoke about. And my mom, bless her, she tried. I mean, because I would have had it from, because I finally recently, just with the help of counselling, I actually phoned my mother and said, what happened?
Mm.
And I'm going through this because I'm struggling. I've been struggling for a long time.
And what did your mum say?
She then told me, she goes, why did you think it happened at 16? Because I fought so hard. From when you were 3 years old, I kept telling them, I don't want this. I never wanted it because she came from a family where she was an only child and she came from a loving home. And she always used to tell us, if anything, you're my treasure. I want to preserve your life, you and your sister.
Had she had it done to her?
She had it done herself.
Yeah.
And she came from family where it was well practiced. And so she said, I struggled with this view. And I realized then, because we were not in Sierra Leone.
Mm.
Growing up as a child, I didn't grow up in Sierra Leone. My father worked in Liberia, which is a neighboring country. So, which meant my mother made sure we weren't regularly coming home. When we do come home, we weren't coming for a long time. We'll be gone off again.
Right.
But at age 9, my mother placed me in a boarding school. And I'm thinking, why? Everybody else was a day student, but I had to be in a boarding school. And she said she chose a boarding school because that was a way for me to be away from everybody else.
Right.
So I'm protected because I went in a convent and the nuns would not allow you. And when I do come from the boarding school on holiday, when I go to stay with my grandparents, she made sure we weren't there for too long because she had to take us away very quick.
So what did she say it was then that meant that by the time you got to 16, she just couldn't put it off any longer? Why
because
not?
Because the pressure was hard. The pressure was more now. It was more intense. And the discussion about it's this or something else. And it's either you are going to leave the house, the marital home, with your children.
Oh, she would have been thrown into the street.
And I don't think that would have ever happened. But she lived with that fear. Uh-huh. And also, she was in a troubled marriage. And if conditions are already there that are making her marriage and her life very difficult. And as a 16-year-old, I knew what my mom was going through. I always would fight for her because she would always call me into a room and says, we're going through this. What do I do? And I felt I had a 16-year-old body, but an adult mind.
So take us back to that day. I mean, I don't really want you to have to go through it, but I think we need to explain what happened so that people understand the enormity of this suffering. So you're on the ground, you're struggling. You can't breathe.
They're
sitting on you. You're struggling and you know perfectly well what's about to happen because you recognise the song and you know what's going on.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, just before it happened, whilst I was going through the struggle, I was stripped naked. My clothes were torn off me. Everything, my knickers were taken off me. And I'm laying there now, naked. And the aunties I love and had huge respect and admiration for came towards me and were holding my legs up to allow the cutter to come in and have access to my private area.
Oh God.
And obviously this lady came in, woman we don't know to this day, was paid. And she does that for a living. That's her job. And I'm sitting there all going through this, looking at this lady. And as she approached me, somehow I had to see my mother in a corner. And you could tell she's struggling to come just again. My mom is people say, oh, she's very aggressive. And she fought really hard, but it was too late. The cutter had already come in and she had like a wrapped cloth in her hand, which carried all her instruments and already prepared. Don't know prepared where, what. Obviously, she had it in her hand. In Sierra Leone, there are no anesthetic use. no cleaning of instrument before any operation. It just happens, as brutal as that. I mean, I don't want to scare your listeners, but it's as crude as you can think about. And so this lady came at me and obviously cut. You feel it. You feel it from the top of your head to the bottom of your soul. And it's just as painful. The sound for me, it's the sound. I can feel every part of me at that age. And I bled. I mean, I could describe it, Vanessa, but I don't want to go into much details. But it's as horrible as you can imagine. And I'm laying there now. And as they do this, it's in seconds, just that.
And effectively, this woman with that, with unsterilized instruments, and not a surgeon or anyone trained.
Not a surgeon, not a trained person.
And with no anaesthetic, nope. Essentially with one cut removed.
Yeah. And this time I'm lying on the ground that's already dirty. Don't forget the people who were standing on the mat that I was laying on.
Yeah.
I'm naked. My privates are wide open. I'm on this filth. They then walk away.
And they had removed with this cart effectively all the sensitive areas of your genitals.
Yeah, so I had what you would describe as a type 2, the total removal of my clitoris, all been removed. And obviously the instrument she was used, because she went so quick in order to... I mean, I don't want to scare your listeners, but I apologize if anybody's been scared by this. But I'm trying to tell as much as I could without having to offend anybody.
You're not offending anybody.
Yeah, but it's a that. But in Sierra Leone, the blades we use are not blades we buy from the local shop or manufactured blades. Mm. People make these. Probably the cutter made her own knife or got somebody to make it. Oh, but these are traditional instruments where they've used cast irons, or we tend to use metals from drums, you know, like oil drums and old rims of tires, the metal rims. We use these metals to do things, create things. So probably I could never tell you where that knife came from, but I just want to give a picture of what the instruments are made up of. Not a blade as you know a blade to be. And sometimes if they do use a blade, they attach it to other instruments. And these are man-made instruments. So imagine you've used that, and not just on me, they continuously use that. This lady probably used the same type on everybody else. And so for me, I personally got infected.
Surprising. I mean, the pain and the shock.
The pain and the shock, the trauma.
Beyond imagining.
Yeah.
I mean, you think in this country, we have a local anaesthetic for a filling in a tooth.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I mean, or to have a wound, a superficial skin wound stitched up. I mean, the pain and the shock and the betrayal,
Vanessa,
and the trauma. I mean, I honestly don't know what to say to you.
I've had three,
I just can't. I do not have the words to say to you, to express.
I've had three children, and for me, labor pain is like toothache.
Yeah.
Because my pain to this day, I can never. I don't know what pain feels like, because for me, that is the greatest pain I've ever experienced. And anything that goes past that, I don't know what that will be, but it's...
So you're on the ground, you're bleeding, you're obviously in a terrible, terrible, terrible state. Mm-hmm. And what happened after that?
Then they walked away, went into the next room where my sister was. She was 6. And I could hear her scream.
Oh, no.
And I froze because I'm laying there for what may have been, I don't even know, period, time scale, but it was eternity. And then after she'd done, there were several of us, and she came back then. They all came back, but these were the cutters now, because she had her own people. Then the process begins, which for me has left me now so much scarred. I don't mind you cutting me, but don't come back and then terrorize, intimidate, make me do things that, for me personally, Vanessa, that's the hardest bit of what I've gone through, because the cutter then came in and she had a bowl in her hand, and we call it calabash. It's a vegetable, but it's grown in Africa in most places, and it's left to dry and it's made into this hard bowl. And in that bowl she had ash, and this ash and other stuff, she had herbs and all kinds of things. But for her, the only way she thought, her knowledge, to stop my bleeding was to put this ash, because they see ash as a a medical thing.
They probably think it's like cauterizing it because it's hot.
It's terrible.
Must be something
because
like that.
We cook with wood, and wood is burnt into this ash, and it's not the fire where we cook, where the firewoods are used. It's not usually on a ceramic plate or a metal stove. It's on the bare naked ground. With dirt, with rocks, stones, you name debris, whatever it is. And it's gathered up with the ash, obviously, because the wood's burnt on top of that. And then this is then used as a talcum powder, sort of, and rubbed on your private parts.
Oh, my goodness me.
And for me, as a child, I had sensitive skin. My skin would blister just with little things on my body.
Yeah.
And I always used to be worried, and I always say to people, oh, don't, even with bathing soap, I can't just taste. But then this thing was put on my skin, which left me with so many blisters.
Oh, my gosh.
And for weeks on end, even because my process went for 2 weeks. And after that, we were taken back home, myself and my sister. But for me, the wounds never healed. They stayed with me because you wear your pants back, you wear tight trousers again, you wear stuff. It doesn't heal because the skin needs to be left or treated. But untreated with these sort of things go on to extend to something else. So for me, it went on to become something else.
Like an endless medical problem.
Endless
cause of pain.
I mean, I had that for a long time.
Oh, you poor thing. You I'm know. So sorry. It's okay. Just appalling, though.
It is.
I mean, it is appalling. When Baroness Rendell said, you know, I said, why do people who haven't got anything to do with that community, why do people need to know about it? I was just asking the question so she could give the right answer,
that's
obviously.
Right.
And she said, because we cannot live in a society in which we allow this kind of cruelty to women.
Yeah.
We can't. We cannot allow it. And we can't really, can we?
We just can't. We can't.
I mean, it's illegal. It's illegal to take a child out of this country to do it. But do you think that the communities who do still want to do this and do still practice it, do you think they realise it's illegal?
Vanessa, yesterday I was appalled. I mean, I have no words to use. I don't even want to be in the same space as these people. I had somebody send me a video of women from my own community that think this is right. And they are happy to, and in fact, they said, I mean, the word this person used in her message to me, it's the West that's making this look bad. We don't see it as mutilation. And I couldn't respond to that person because for me, I just couldn't believe what I was hearing in today's 21st century.
Let me ask you this just for clarity so that people understand what the heck we are talking about here.
That's right.
Your mother was under such enormous pressure to have this done to you and to your sister.
Mm-hmm.
The people who put her under pressure to do it,
mm-hmm.
in their heads and in their hearts,
mm-hmm.
what do they think is good about it? Why do they think that female genital mutilation is a good thing to do and should be done to little girls? What, for what reason?
I have no idea, Vanessa. That is something I have struggled for over 20 years.
But these women who sent you the video saying, we think it's good, it's just the West that makes it look bad.
Yeah.
What do they think is good about
this it? This person that sent me this clip, I actually asked her if she could expand, because somebody like that, I said, I want to be very prepared to have a discussion with that person and go back to them and says, tell me what you mean by that.
Mm.
Because I don't see myself as being an African black woman, no different than a European white lady.
Of course.
I have lived in the UK. UK is my home, and so is my two daughters, because I have three children. I want to look at my daughters and make them feel they are no different than anybody else. And why should culture, or whatever you would like to call it, dictate how I live my life? And I feel I don't want to be under any label. I want to see myself as a world person. I live in the world where things may not be glossy or colourful, but it is the world nonetheless I live in.
Does your husband feel the same as you?
Oh, yes, my husband, bless him. He's been a treasure. And Vanessa, we had so many struggles, and I never knew why. Until very, very recently. I've been through FGM when I was 16. Mm. I'm now 44.
Mm.
And I felt really at a place where I couldn't talk to anybody. The only person that knew about my pain was my husband. And for a long time, he took the blame for some of my pain. Uh-huh. And I owe a lot to him. He means the world, but he doesn't know it. And my children, again, have been so good because there are times when they would look at me and they said, it's not fair, Mommy. You have to go through this.
It's not fair. Of course it's not fair. Let me ask you something else. And I mean this in a very serious way. You say, and quite rightly, you live in this country. You're British. You're exactly the same as any other woman, woman in the whole country, anyone listening to this, which of course you are. Of course you are. We live in a, some people might say, ridiculously sexualized society, mm-hmm. where people talk about sex all the time, write about it. It's a feature of almost every film you watch, every mm-hmm. TV show. People make jokes about it. People dress in a very sexualized way. Mm-hmm. And lots of women's magazines, for example, programs are directed at women, yeah. are very much focusing on, you know, how to have a great sex life, you know, how to be, you know, sexy in the bedroom, how to have a fabulous marital sex life, all that kind of thing. It's quite hard to live in London mm-hmm. and ignore it, isn't it?
It is.
As far as you're concerned, having gone through what you've been through, where are you on that, in that sort of arena, that kind of area of life and discussion?
Oh, for me, fashion is what I want to be. Mm. It doesn't put me under any trauma. It doesn't terrorize me. It doesn't leave me in fear. Mm. It doesn't make me feel less of a person. Obviously, I'm not a model. I don't intend to be one.
No.
But I don't aspire to be things that I am not. But FGM, for me, made my life a living hell. I look at glossy magazines, they don't. Mm. They obviously try to make life a little bit nicer. We love things that are nice and comfortable and convenient. I love that. That's good. Mm. And it educates people. It makes us look at the world in a different way. But it doesn't put me in a place where I bleed, where psychologically I can't think for myself. I'm totally controlled. Overall, my entire being is controlled.